Has your data been hacked? Do you feel uneasy about the vulnerability of your personal information online? Were you involved in the Target, LinkedIn, or Microsoft data leaks? Don't know? If not, then pay attention. Join Forrest Garvin from PrepperNet for a free webinar on privacy and security. Gain insights into safe internet browsing, VPNs, crafting online aliases, secure emails, detecting if your data has been hacked, and managing passwords. Secure your spot today for this webinar on privacy and security. It's free. This webinar delves into comprehensive strategies for bolstering your online privacy. We've got you covered, from fortifying your passwords to shielding your financial information and mastering state-of-the-art encryption techniques. We're offering two convenient dates to suit your schedule. Reserve your spot now at preppernet.com/privacy. Don't let cyber threats erode your peace of mind any longer. Take the first step toward a safer, more secure online experience by joining us for our free webinar. Remember, knowledge is power when it comes to safeguarding your privacy. Sign up now at preppernet.com/privacy. We'll see you there.
Survive. Thrive. Stay alive. It's time to get prepared with the Prepping Academy podcast.
Hey, welcome to the Prepping Academy. I am Forrest, and man, do we have a show for you guys tonight. Many, many times I've had these guests on, and they are really good friends. They're good friends to the community. And tonight I'm going to pepper them with questions, and they don't know the answer or the questions. I hope they know the answers. but we haven't coordinated, so this is going to be kind of fun. And they're probably not nervous, though. They've done this so many times. I bet you guys have been interviewed hundreds and hundreds of times.
Well, I don't know, Forrest. I mean, you know that. I thought that we were going to be talking about fried dog legs and cat neck soup.
Oh, yeah.
I even sent you pictures of some very nicely prepared meals there.
Just so people understand, that was the topic that Forrest told us we were going to be discussing when he emailed us and asked us to do this interview.
So we have Dr. Joe Alton and Nurse Amy Alton on as guests tonight. And I did. I sent them a message saying, I want you guys to come on the podcast. Let's discuss. What was it again? Fried
dog legs and cat's neck soup.
Yeah.
Cat neck soup.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I didn't forget about that, but you guys kept bringing, I'm like, yeah. So that's hilarious. But you guys are like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm like, really?
So the funny thing is I had to find a soup with turkey necks to get the cat neck soup.
So there is an image I sent you. Oh my God.
That is hilarious. That is so funny. Well, thank you for coming on the show. And I can't wait. Literally, 30 days from today, we'll see each other in Harmony,
that's right.
North Carolina.
That's right. At the Mountain Readiness event, it's going to be great. There are always a lot of great people there. And I know you have Angry American, Chris Weatherman, you have his crew, and you have just so many people, Amber Toombs and her husband, and just a lot of awesome people there. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. So we went last year, we're going this year. And when this podcast airs, there'll be 2 weeks for people to go ahead and get their tickets. If you need information, you can go to mountainreadiness.com or you can go to preppernet.net. The reason I'm sending you to preppernet.net is because we're going to kind of camp together. We're going to have like a dessert night. We're going to hang out when there's not a lot of things going on. But it's going to be a great show. You guys are teaching two classes?
Yes, we're going to be doing...
Well, no, we're teaching one class, official.
Well, one hands-on class, and then doing a lecture.
And then you're doing a lecture.
So those are two classes.
Yes. What's your lecture on?
My lecture is going to be on being the survival medic for a group in times of trouble. And so we're going to talk about all the various things that you have to be prepared for. We're going to talk a lot about different items that you should have and different... You know what? What we really need to talk about is mindset, because the mindset is so different in these kinds of situations. You know, in normal times, what's your mindset supposed to be? Your goal? What's your goal? You want to stabilize that person. You want to get them to the next highest medical asset as soon as you possibly can. But in times of trouble, when you know what really has hit the fan, I mean, you are the end of the line when it comes to your family's well-being. And if something happens, you have to take care of that, I don't know, broken bone or that bleeding injury until it has healed completely from beginning to end, from the incurrence of that injury all the way to the very end of the recovery. So this is something that a lot of people can't wrap their heads around. I mean, even paramedics and, you know, very highly trained medical professionals just sort of assume that, you know, they have to go a certain amount and then boom, they're done with their responsibility. But in times of trouble, that's not going to be the way it is. The survival medic is the end of the line.
So part of that sounded like your commercial, by the way.
Yes, my commercial.
A couple lines in there, and I'm like, oh, I've heard this before.
He's got some of this memorized, and he always tells me I need to have, you know, some stuff. And I'm like, I can't do it. I just have to come off the cuff.
Right? You haven't heard some of my commercials. I've actually been making commercials.
Oh, he's hilarious.
I've been making some commercials
for
our podcast.
Plus, he enters them in different areas in the podcast.
Yeah.
You'll hear this craziness, and you're like, what in the heck is he doing?
I say, portions of this show are sponsored by baboons. And then I tell them all about baboons.
Nice.
I say, portions of the show are sponsored by a ham sandwich.
This is very serious
for people on
medical podcast. Right. And then he says, this is sponsored by baboons.
So I have one for people that listen to watch Fox News, I have one for Prevalaxian balance, balance of nature or something like that.
Balance of nature.
Just made with all the best ingredients, the ashes of a phoenix, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
He just makes up stuff. It's hilarious.
So I'm going to ask you guys some questions in a minute. Yeah. But first of all, in my hands, I have a book called The Survival Medicine Handbook.
We could see it.
I know. Well, you can see it, but
for those listening out there, it's a very large book. It's an 8x10, 2 inches thick.
This is the complete guide to everything. You don't need another medical book for the doomsday. You just don't. Everything is in this one. But you went ahead and went crazy, and you did another book called Alton's Pandemic Preparedness Guide.
Yes.
Then you did another one, like we didn't have enough information already now. Alton's Antibiotics and Infectious Diseases.
Yes.
I guess these are, and with these books, you could literally survive a nuclear bomb. This is all you need.
Which is interesting because I'm actually in the early stages of writing a book about survival in a post-nuclear situation.
Of course, he'll probably have it finished.
So that might be my next
after
one.
The bombs have been dropped, probably.
Okay.
Then,
sadly,
we took a right turn because we don't take left turns. We took a right turn, and you wrote this book called Snowbee.
Yes, Snowbee, the first snowman.
Snowbee's not injured. He's not paralyzed. He doesn't break any bones. And it's a kid's book.
Yeah, but Santa has to whittle arms for him because he's born without arms. So he has some disabilities, but he gets through them. And I think for us, it's just a lot of fun to write, you know, kids books. The next book that we're going to be writing, that's going to be a kids book. We hope to have that out by Christmas.
Oops.
Is going to be The Christmas Bunny.
Yes.
Okay. A big partnership on that. I'll send it out over and over and over and again. And but yeah, so I was kind of late to the casting call on this book, getting it out and information out. But yeah, I love that. That is awesome. So my first question to you guys, can you tell us a bit about your background? Okay. And then how you twisted and turned your background into the preparedness arena. Because it's not every day. A doctor or nurse says, you know what? I'm just going to stop practicing and making real money. Let's go over here to the preparedness area and make little money.
Yeah.
Well, Well, we started off actually being together in the same practice.
Okay.
We were in a practice in the early part of my career. We delivered babies, and ended up doing a lot of pelvic surgery. Amy is a certified nurse midwife and an advanced registered nurse practitioner, or a nurse practitioner, I guess, is what they call them. And she has a lot of experience. She's delivered thousands of babies herself.
Yeah. So, we were traditional doctors and nurse practitioners, but we live in South Florida. So mm-hmm. My dad was military. And so he taught us a lot of things growing up. We lived kind of in the outskirts of Atlanta in the boondocks. Brooks would had railroad tracks and a little store, which was also the post office, and I think one gas pump. And the guy who ran that was the mayor. Nice. But we were outdoors a lot. We did a lot of camping, a lot of hiking. We had motorcycles. I climbed trees, and we just did crazy things, hunted things. So I learned a lot of outdoor skills from my dad. We moved to South Florida, and there was always the threat of hurricanes. So we had a lot of prep stuff. We had tents and water storage and extra food. My mom canned a lot of food also when we lived in Georgia. So I learned the canning skills from her. But I wasn't too concerned because we had grocery stores not too far away down here in Florida. But then we started actually having issues with hurricanes, and we saw Katrina come through, and Joe and I were together already and married, and we saw the horrible disaster that happened there. And then there were starting to be threats of plagues and pandemics and flus. And we're like, wow, you know, we're kind of due for this. So a lot of our writings and teachings starting in 2009, 2010 included our theories and our feelings about, hey, something could happen to the world and we're due for it. So we started talking about
pandemics,
preparing for pandemics, things you would store in your house, you know, how you would, you know, take care of your loved ones if somebody was sick, how to prevent people from getting sick, all the things that you guys all know now because we went through a pandemic. We were trying to teach people what you needed to store for preparedness. And then looking at the other disaster, that was one that was not, it was looming on the horizon, but had not hit. But then looking at Katrina and seeing the actual disaster and how unprepared people were who didn't now have hospital care, who didn't have EMTs to get to them and were stuck in their houses or even in these hospitals that had no electricity, no food, ran out of supplies. I mean, the chaos, I think the full chaos of the hospitals mm-hmm. that were flooded and had no electricity. I don't think we'll ever know the real stories because I think the real stories are so horrific mm-hmm. that it would be more, people would think it was just fiction. Like that couldn't really have happened. The people who experienced that probably all looked at each other and said, we need to like never speak of this again. Right. Like what we're doing to survive here and what's happening to the patients and the people that we can't take care of, we need to never tell anybody this. You know, and hope that the witnesses keep their mouth shut too, because I'm sure it was really bad. But we knew how bad it was that people didn't know, and we wanted to help people not have to go through that again, to say, here's a book that I'm hurt, my leg is broken, somebody's bleeding. You know, hopefully you've looked at it before that happened, but I've got something that could tell me what to do. I can't call 911. I don't have a next door neighbor who's a doctor with a first aid kit that'll come over and help me. I'm stuck. What do I do? And so we wanted to put that power and that knowledge into people's hands. So again, our mindset in 2009 was, could have a pandemic. Things are going to get real bad. We need to teach people what to do. And we've seen Katrina. Obviously, there are a lot of natural disasters in the world. We need to prepare people for those. So it wasn't just one topic that stimulated our writings and our teachings. And around the same time, we found Ron Davis, who was running, or no, it wasn't Ron Davis. I forget the guy's
Douglas.
Name. No, it wasn't even him. It was the guy who now runs those master classes. The young guy who's real thin. You're not going to remember his name. He ran that first prepper show that we went to in Texas. He invited us there. That's where we met Survival Mom in 2010. And we met a few other preparedness people who were right. doing this already. And, you know, we kind of all came up together and, you know, supported each other and, you know, talked to each other on podcasts and started YouTube videos and helped each other. But that's where it grew from after that first right. show.
We're grateful to James Wesley Rawls of Survival Blog for publishing my first article on, fish antibiotics.
On the antibiotics, yep.
First right, topic. And expiration dates.
Yep, and his website was very, very, very popular. It was like the survival website.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, it's still a great website. It's still full of amazing information, but great. Now there's been so much growth. There's been so many other people. I mean, look at, we have PrepperNet. Now, I mean, it's that connects people from all right, across, right. not just this country, but the world. You know, people all say to us every time we went to shows, how do I meet people? How do I get to know people? And there was a time where we couldn't give them the answer. Hey, you got PrepperNet now. There was no answer. There was no central location where like-minded people, you know, no matter what your background is, rich, poor, city, rural, no matter your color, no matter your religion, no matter your political status, that everyone had the same feelings about what was happening in the world and wanted to do something about it.
And so people kept asking us after each article that we would write, we would say, okay, well, that's great to know about this, but what about this? What
right.
happens if
I have this other happens? Topics? Right.
What if I have... get mm-hmm. hepatitis, or what if I get appendicitis
or malaria,
or right. things like that.
Septicemia.
You know, what do you do when there's no hospital or whether there was no doctor?
Right.
I mean, there were even books that were available at the time, like Where There Is No Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Even they ended their chapters with and go to the hospital.
Yes.
And find a doctor.
Yeah.
Whereas we decided that everything we were going to write was going to assume that there will never be a doctor,
yep.
and that there will never be a hospital.
You're on your own for the foreseeable future. Now,
with
hopefully,
limited supplies.
It comes back. You know, we all, there's always hope. I always have hope that things will get better. I had hope the pandemic would end quickly, but I knew in the back of my mind it wasn't going to.
Right, well, basically,
I knew this.
Basically, our goal is to die at age 90 or so with our great grandkids, you know, whispering in our ear, "Hey, pops, what are we going to do with all these medical supplies?"
Right.
You know, that's what we're hoping for. But in case that
and
doesn't happen, we want people to
stuff.
Be ready.
You know, it's been said that the only people that are going to survive, you know, the apocalypse is PrepperNet members.
There you
yes,
go.
Yes.
I mean, I love it.
Only if they sign up.
I like that.
Yeah, so make sure you sign up.
Because you have amazing resources.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's been said, so I don't want to say, I mean, I don't want to get to it or anything.
Yes.
So what are some of the biggest misconceptions people have about in an environment where there is no doctors and nurses?
Mm-hmm.
What's the biggest misconception of what people or how they're going to deal with it or what they're going to do?
Biggest misconception is that they have enough medical supplies.
The other one is that of what actually is going to occur. That people think there's going to be constant battles and constant shootings. Well, I guess if you live on the front lines of Ukraine, that would probably be your answer. But it just depends on what mm-hmm. happens to us.
Right.
Most likely, it's not going to be a World War III on the ground in the United States, and we're all shooting at each other, you know, or shooting at the bad guys, and then we're being shot too. Most likely it's some kind of collapse, financial or supplies or whatever, and we, you know, an EMP takes out our grid, and we're dealing with things more like the Civil War dealt with food poisoning and these things that you can take care of that people aren't just immediately going to die from.
Right. So, well, the thing is that people need to know simple things.
Yes.
Simple things like simply how to make the water that you're drinking safe for you to drink.
Potable.
So you don't get sick.
That was where that word comes from.
How do you prepare food properly so that you don't get sick. I mean, yep. the Ebola epidemic in Africa, West Africa in 2014, I mean, that was caused by people eating bush meat, but they were cooking it over these 55-gallon drums, you know, and they
most
were
likely
eating
undercooking.
Half-cooked fruit bats.
Right.
And indeed, you know, that virus was able to hop onto humans. So that's one thing that I think is important. People need to know that there are basic things.
Yes.
Food preparation.
Yep.
And water disinfection.
Safety, yep.
That
water
the
safety.
Medic has to enforce the proper treatment for.
Right.
So you don't start off by having your people all get sick at once. An entire community can get sick if you don't deal with those issues. But, and also what I was saying is you need to have enough medical supplies. When I say that,
right.
Is that you need to have enough materials so that you can, disinfect your water, and enough materials so that you can, you know, cook your food properly. But you also need bandages, you need tourniquets, you need all of the standard medical supplies that you have. Whatever you have, it isn't nearly enough, because all you have to do is take a two liter bottle of water and just pour it on the floor, and then take all the gauze that you possibly could have and try to sop up that water. Believe me, you will have used up all of your stuff.
Right.
All the bandages that you possibly can have just with what you've got there.
And also an interesting statistic that I've heard you mention before that highlights the fact that people are probably not going to be dying for gunshot wounds is the Civil War statistics of
yes.
who died, what killed people more often.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Probably, I would say that 2/3 of the people that the soldiers that died in the Civil War died because of dysentery, or died because of those kinds of
bad water, bad food
that caused dehydration because yep. of diarrheal disease, things like yep. that.
They didn't have IV hydration, and we're not going to have IV hydration in a post-apocalyptic world, or whatever you want to call it.
And that's why
FHTF right. situation.
That's why we go and look at some of the older treatments that were used, for example, for dehydration. Let's say you have somebody that's unconscious and is absolutely dehydrated, dying maybe because they're unconscious, maybe because they are so dehydrated that they're dying.
They've lost consciousness.
You may have to do something, and people are going to listen, hear these two words.
It sounds
okay,
crazy,
I'm crazy,
but it's
rectal rehydration.
The only
I write about that was used in World yep. War I before and in the Spanish-American War. But you know, want to know something? It works.
It'll work
to hydrate you,
right?
And
okay.
so,
basically,
and so we tell people how to do
it. That one.
Yeah, I knew you were. I knew it. I knew you'd be surprised.
It's basically like. There's a Foley catheter that if you've ever had a Foley catheter, most men have not. Women may have if they've had babies and had an epidural or a C-section. But you're putting a tube inside the rectum, and you're going to blow up the little balloon of water inside so it doesn't come out. And you're going to connect tubing and, you know, clean as sterile water as you can. As clean as you can. It doesn't have to be 100% sterile, but, you know, as potable as possible. And you're going to slowly be dripping this into the rectum, because the rectum will absorb fluid. So you can't
entire large intestine.
You can rehydrate somebody through their intestines, whether they're conscious or not. What you can't do is give them food. You cannot put smoothies in there. That's not going to work. We're talking about fluid. Well, I just want to be clear.
I think you've been very clear.
I want to make sure that people aren't sticking, like, what's that protein shake that
yes,
old people
yes.
drink?
Yeah.
What are those called?
Yeah.
Come on.
Ensure.
I don't want anybody dumping Ensure into someone's rectum. Okay, this is not, you cannot right. absorb nutrients to the rectum. But
right.
you
I think
can
that we have
absorbed.
I think we have reached Forrest's. Forrest, the level of tolerance for rectal
dehydration. I can't stop laughing. I did not expect to talk about rectum sticking things
but,
up.
But we basically
then,
are telling people how to solve the problem that may kill the most people in a grid down situation. We basically just gave them a tool
You gave me the information.
Dehydration, so people don't die. Wait, what?
Give me a how-to after
a how. We did.
That's it. And so we have.
I can keep going too.
So you're saying
a lot of our stuff we talk about is step by step, tells you exactly what to do. So
hey, I made a graphic that shows how to make that in the book.
Hey, let's take a quick break.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
So let me. I got my notes here. No milkshakes up the butt.
No, okay. Sure. Yes, right. No smoothies.
No smoothies up the.
That is
up the wahoo. Up the wahoo or the wazoo.
Yeah, I think we're done here. I think that's all.
Yes, I think that.
Mic drop.
Oh my goodness. Okay, that is the best information I've ever gotten in my life. Right there.
It may save your life one day.
But seriously, we think outside the box, and you're not going to see what is in our books.
You won't see that
in the average first aid book.
You won't even see that in Where There Is No Doctor.
Right.
You're not going to see that in any other book published anywhere. We have unique information.
Okay, so... that's great information. I am glad I know that now. I would not want to be in my group, survival group now that I know. Oh, you definitely are dehydrated. Just bend over. I got to just stick this and we're going to. Okay. In your opinion, what's the most essential skill for everyone to have? The common skill that you wish or everyone should have for everyone to be better prepared?
Well, obviously, we've already talked about making water potable and cooking food. So we're going to pass that. We're going to go past that. We're going to be doing more medical.
Yes,
so
medical.
Then my next feeling would be wound care. Because I think even the simplest cuts, if people are ignoring them, you know, they start festering. They get a little pussy. They enlarge. Now the tissue's breaking down. It's getting deeper. It's getting bigger. Then it gets into the bloodstream. And now you've got a problem if you don't have antibiotics that you just aren't going to be able to solve. And if it's infected with something that wouldn't even be susceptible to antibiotics, because we have a lot of antibiotic resistant bacteria out there now that gets into your wound. Now you're in deep trouble. So I think proper wound cleaning immediately upon injury, you know, knowing how to stop the bleeding. 80 to 90% of bleeding can be stopped with simple pressure with a cotton or some form of material between your hopefully gloved hand and the person's wound. With enough pressure, it allows the clotting factors to work. Most people have normal clotting factors. They can form clots and they will stop bleeding on their own. It's like a plumber who goes to fix, you know, the faucet, he turns off the water so he can fix the faucet. So you've got to shut the blood from coming out so that the clot can form inside. That's what your pressure is doing. It's allowing the normal body clotting mechanisms to occur so that that person actually stops the bleeding themselves. And then you can carry on. But wound care is, I think, one of the most important things. You know, be like, oh, I'll just wash it with a little water. Well, is your water clean? Did you wash it well enough? What cut the person? Was it a dirty knife that they were using to dress an animal?
Did you flush the debris out?
Right. Did you actually clean it well enough? How did they get, cut? Is there splinters in there? Are there rocks in there? Are there pieces of sand in there? You need to get that all out. So learning how to properly clean a wound and then how to take care of a wound until it's healed, I think is one of the most important things to learn. It will prevent a lot of issues and you having to use a lot of your, if you have antibiotics, you know, that stored up. You want a prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
That's right, because you're going to have limited amounts of those kinds of medicines.
Right.
So how about alcohol? Like drinking alcohol, because people, that is a definite prep that people, you know, are prepping, like vodka.
You mean to put in a wound?
Yeah.
So initially,
or no, the rectum.
Yeah. Well, that actually would work to make someone extremely wasted and maybe kill them because, you know, they're gonna lose consciousness.
But with alcohol, rum, whatever they have, would that kill or clean a wound?
It's not necessary. They've done studies about using sterile water versus, I'm going to go back to the potable water, because whatever you've had to do to make water safe to drink is good enough for the water treatment to clean a wound. You do not have to sterilize the water for cleaning the wound on the initial cleaning. Okay, that's, I'm talking about the initial cleaning, the flushing, the scrubbing, the washing. You know, my parents were really into hydrogen peroxide, which, ow, I never got an infected wound. I don't know. Thanks, Mom. And the mercurochrome, they would dump that, remember that painted stuff, that orange yellow stuff they'd paint on us?
So using this kind of stuff like alcohol is okay for a first cleaning, but it's not something you want to do long term, because the cells that are trying to fill in this wound
in the healing process,
they're what we call hydrophilic, and they're basically, they love water, they love moistness,
right? They need,
but they don't love
saturated in a little bit of water,
but not alcohol. Alcohol dries out cells
exactly
and will slow,
and so does hydrophilic process. So if you're going to do something, if you really want to go hog wild, which again, research has not shown that prevents future infections, if I wash it properly, I don't need to put the hydrogen peroxide, I don't need to dump vodka into it. If you, you know, feel you want to use a few drops of that to torture your friend, that's fine. But it's not going to actually statistically prevent an infection. Good wound cleaning, good wound care, you know, changing the dressing twice a day, you know, putting on my perfect wound healing is raw honey. I love that. That is going to keep a nice moisture level. It's a low pH. It helps prevent other bacteria from growing. If there is some kind of infection in there and the honey has a contact with it, it does work as if it's an antibiotic ointment. And we all know in the prepper world that raw, unprocessed honey lasts forever. So you don't have to worry about an expiration date there.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Next question is, what are some practical steps a family can do to prepare for emergencies, especially when it comes to medical, not just generic, but medical?
Well, I think simply teaching your children, teaching the kids how to deal with some basic issues, I think would be an important thing. This is what in the past the Boy Scouts were for. So in the Girl Scouts, basically they would take kids out. I know even my nephews, who were both Eagle Scouts, took intensive courses on how to deal with injuries and how to deal with infections and stuff like that.
Transport patients.
How to transport
injured people. Right.
Right.
The Boy Scouts were very good with that kind of education.
So there's a lot of opportunities to learn for young people. And the more that young people get used to these types of things, learning how to treat different types of injuries, different types of ailments, the more likely that it's going to come naturally to them later, and you will have a much larger pool from which to choose your medics in if something really happens.
And one other thing I would say is if you are going to take on that responsibility to become your family's medic, you know, not to promote our own book, but honestly, what's out there, the Survival Medicine Handbook is where you need to start, because it tells you what you're going to expect for injuries. It's going to tell you incredible detailed first aid supply lists for one person, for a family. If you want to include herbal, if you have children, what are pediatric supplies you need? If you're going to maybe deal with having to deliver babies, what supplies you need? Dental supplies. We've flushed it all out into lists that are really comprehensive, and you can check them off as you get them. So if you want to be organized, if you want to be organized in becoming more medically prepared, the book is where you need to start. Honestly, it helps you organize. And I tell people that I talk to on the phone, you know, who's like, oh, which first aid kit do I get? I'm like, don't buy a first aid kit right now. Please just start with the book. Well, I was going to get the book anyway. I'm like, okay, just buy the book. I don't want you to buy anything else because you might have some things home already. Get the book, look through the book, look in the beginning parts at least, look at the checklist, see what you've got already, and then contact me once you've read through this book, at least precursory, and then you'll have a better idea of where you are now and where we need to go from.
Right.
And a starting and place.
As far as you are willing to go.
Right.
I mean, some people are willing to treat an injury, a wound, or let's say a sprain or a strain,
or but stop bleeding.
They're not going to be ready to
sew you up,
extract the tooth,
or sew you up, right,
or to suture a wound closed. And so everybody's has their limit as to how far they'll go,
right?
You know, with regards to that, you know, even the best medics would probably be pretty reluctant to try to take out an appendix, you know, without.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you start kids at like a stop to bleed class or a CPR class or just some basic medical things?
You can get a stop the bleed class. That's awesome.
Well, stop the bleed class.
I think that for everybody needs to do that.
Yeah. Some basic
free, I think around the world, around the United States, most of the time, the stop the bleed class.
Yeah, we're actually certified instructors for Stop the Bleed also.
Yeah, so we are. We believe in the four R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, and reduce hemorrhage. And so we believe that, and I'm being absolutely serious when I say this, that I believe that it should be part of the curriculum at the, I don't know, seventh grade level, level for every child in the country. I really believe that, and it's not something that has gained any traction, and we unfortunately see school shootings, you know, on a regular basis still, and some people's lives would have been saved if this had become part of the culture. That's what we need to have.
Yeah, every student knew how to do it.
Right, not only
before the EMTs get in there, before even the policemen who know how to stop bleed get in there.
Right, you lose if you had an injury that severed your femoral artery or tore your femoral artery, you would lose a pint of blood, probably a minute. And you would have probably five or six minutes before you would be beyond help. And so,
which is not
considering how long it takes for an ambulance to get there, you can tell that there are lives that can be saved. Wait,
but maybe even the ambulance to be allowed in.
Right.
Because if they're still an active shooter, the ambulance can sit outside for hours.
Right. So what I'm trying to point out here is that the people who die oftentimes could have been saved by the quick action of a
fellow
person
shooter
at the scene.
Yep.
If that person had some training.
Yep.
That's why it's so important to get the four R's.
Yep.
Okay, question. On this just came up. So let's say that someone's main artery is severed in their leg, their right leg.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My goal is to stop the bleeding. So let me ask you, when you say stop the bleeding, do I want the blood to come out, not come out of his body? I mean, so here's the way I look at it.
You want,
hold on, let me talk.
There's one tube supplying the blood. There's one tube where the blood keeps going that wants the blood to go down so it could go to the foot. When you apply pressure, are you trying to stop the flow or are you trying to just keep it in the body so the other tube can still pull that blood?
No. So you're
trying.
What
I'm saying, though?
I follow what you're saying. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to stop the flow of blood from the heart.
Okay.
Going out towards your fingers and your toes, because that's how blood flows with oxygen, is away.
Wouldn't the other one be sucking blood though?
No. Not really? No. No. Okay. No.
The thing is
you need to cut all that off, because everything that's flowing away from the heart is your oxygenated blood, your arterial blood. Okay. And that is at a big pressure because your heart has just pumped it out, and that's going to pump out at a good rate, and you're going to lose all your blood. So you want to clamp down with a tourniquet, put pressure on that vessel, that arterial blood vessel, so that no more blood comes out of that blood vessel from the heart.
To show you just how important that is, the standard is to place a tourniquet tight enough so that there are no pulses beyond the level of the wound.
Right.
So you should not feel if
there should be no
had a tourniquet on my arm, you should not feel a pulse in my wrist.
Right.
If you
need to cut it all, one on my leg, all off.
There's one on my leg, you shouldn't feel anything right. Behind the knee or right. On the foot, or there should be no pulses beyond.
Again,
so you want to just stop it.
It's like going back to the whole plumber. You want to stop the bleeding, you want to fix the faucet, you need to shut off the water. So that tourniquet is you're shutting off the water.
So I don't
cut that flow off
and put it in the other vet. No, I'm kidding.
Yes. Microsurgery during a hemorrhage.
Okay.
I want to see that.
You guys said something, and I'm a big advocate of this, that is we as a society, I believe, and I know, have dumbed down our youth and not give our youth credit to be able to learn stuff like this and apply it. We think that they're too young, they're not capable, and I totally disagree with that. I believe that a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 9-year-old can do amazing things if they have the knowledge. Society doesn't believe that, though. And it's people are dying because of that, but at some point we need to recognize that 7, 8, 9-year-old, and 10-year-olds sometimes make better decisions than adults do when it comes to emergencies. But we do need to train the young on how to do that. I'm not sure the young can quite do a completely CPR compression enough to keep someone alive, but they can try.
And also they could maybe put on a tourniquet.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
Because those windlass, I mean, maybe they can't twist it as many times as, you know, an adult male could, but if they get it good enough where there's less blood coming out, then that prolongs the time of somebody coming on the scene to help that person. So, you know, like you said, give them credit for at least being able to do part of the job,
right?
Which helps other people come and
even at those ages, it's important to begin to impart the medical knowledge. The very basic medical knowledge, you know, what is blood? You know, what is a bone? You know, things like that. If you ask your average 6-year-old, they probably couldn't tell you what a bone
is. Anatomy. Really. They need to start anatomy much, much earlier. You know, I think kids are very curious when they're young. And I think if you feed that curiosity, you may seed so many more EMTs and firefighters and doctors and nurses and people in the medical field with that curiosity of learning about the body. I don't even know when they teach anatomy anymore. I know anatomy was in high school.
Yeah, it's high school.
But, you know,
I think it's still in high
simple
school.
Anatomy or at a younger age. I think kids are super curious about their bodies.
I think a kid
would love to know. Like and the younger you are, it's like teaching another language. The younger they are, the more they absorb that and they can deal with it better. You teach Spanish to a 10th grader versus an 8-year-old, the 8-year-old's going to get it much, much faster.
We worry too much about being sensitive, that our kids are too sensitive to learn this kind of stuff. And then we have to give them the ability to learn these things and to desensitize them from what might be serious things later on.
I think anatomy and physiology in a simple way, I think younger kids would love it. I think they would be like, oh my gosh, that's how the body works.
Oh yeah, if I brought a human skull into a classroom, they would probably think it was like the coolest thing in town.
I know, right?
Son, that's a rectum.
We won't talk about rectal rehydration with them.
Dehydration without IVs.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey guys, thank you for joining us for the first half of our show with Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. Make sure you catch our next podcast where we will have part two.
Thanks for listening to the Prepping Academy podcast. Preppers unite at www.preppingacademy.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.